All right. Hello, everyone, on our UGA Sports YouTube page. I am Dane Young. That is Brent Rollins. You know him from Pro Football Focus. You know me from UGASports.com. We collaborate for our Film Don't Lie series. And it is April, Brent. And so that means that the NFL draft is in our sights. And that's what we're doing here today, talking about cornerbacks. I know you've been deep into mock drafts. You do a really fun thing on your Twitter account where you see what the Falcons could possibly do. But the whole first round, though, is it looks completely different than it did this time last week.
The draft season, what's amazing is how it's grown. I remember being in college and skipping through the season in Madden just to get to the draft and the free agency part. It's just exploded from an industry standpoint. There's so many different websites and people who that's their focus is all about the draft and all about prospects. And we at PFF obviously have just big time dove into that as well. And you know, we even have a podcast focusing on draft specifically. So it's just fun. And this year's draft to me is as intriguing as I can remember. I mean, even back, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, and you've had multiple first round quarterbacks last year, three, you know, even you know, back with Baker and Lamar draft with they had five in that one. So, but the top heavy, the fact that the possibility exists. And like I tweeted this on January 30th, I still think it's the case that the first four picks are going to be quarterback. It's just when that's the case, when it's quarterback and quarterback movement and all the talk about it, because it's such an important position, it makes it that much more fun.
I was texting you earlier, so I'm just going to bring the conversation to our YouTube page so that our audience can hear it. I've been seeing and reading the buzz about Mac Jones possibly being the targeted player by the 49ers at number 3 overall, which just seems absurd to me. And it's not a knock on Mac Jones and his talent. It's just with such a loaded quarterback draft at the top, it would seem like a lot to give up to go get Mac Jones when, frankly, I think he or someone not too far below his caliber would have been available. So I'll pose this question to you. 49ers, what the hell?
You know, it seems more and more, obviously, like Urban Meyer didn't even go to Wilson's or, you know, Wilson's pro day. So they're clearly taking Lawrence at one, as they should. I mean, I think he's the best sort of prospect. Size, speed, arm, all the boxes that you can check since, you know, Andrew Luck. So that's there. And I think the momentum is building towards Zach Wilson at 2. So 3, the 49ers moving up from 12 to 3, just it's okay. The Matt, you see quotes from, I think, even Daniel Jeremiah that we had on the podcast earlier in the offseason talking about it seems to be the league consensus that it's for Mac Jones. But I don't see it. I still think in the end, you take the bigger, better athlete, and that's Fields or Lance. And which one they prefer, I mean, I was listening to some sports radio yesterday, a great question posed is, you know, when you think about it, if you're at 3 and you've got those two guys who are both, you know, big guys, physical, speed, arm talent all day long, what is it that you use to distinguish, hey, I like this one better than that one? Is it fit, scheme fit? Is it, you know, personality sort of, you know, just characteristics, makeup, but by all intents, you know, all purposes that we see, they're both like great kids and smart and all those kind of things. So what is it that you use for San Francisco to distinguish, hey, I want this guy? So that to me is going to be fascinating 3, but I think it is between Fields and Lance for that pick.
I do think one thing that Georgia fans can take some solace in, and as we discuss cornerbacks in this episode of our UGA draft preview, we're going to get to some of this as well because of some of the matchups that they had. But when you start looking at the players that are really getting some buzz in the conversations for the draft, and this is beyond quarterbacks, but includes them too, it's guys that had success against Georgia or were primary causes why Georgia lost football games. When you're looking at Mac Jones and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle to an extent, but really it was Devontae Smith multiple times against Georgia over the last 3 years. And when you look at Ja'Marr Chase and the game that he had a couple of years ago, even J.C. Horn, who I think is getting a lot of buzz as a rising defensive back, and you know he's got the NFL pedigree for sure. But you know those cornerbacks under Will Muschamp did a great job against Georgia receivers, and so I think you're seeing that the teams that have had success against Georgia were led by players that are now about to get paid.
Yes, and what do draft evaluators and NFL evaluators want to do as much as anything? They want to watch you go against guys who are also going to be NFL guys. So we're going to break down the cornerbacks here in a little bit and talk about Tyson Campbell, DJ Daniel, and Eric Stokes. And we're also going to look at how they performed against Ja'Marr Chase, Terrace Marshall, and Justin Jefferson in the LSU game, against Josh Palmer at Tennessee, against Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams in Auburn, against, you know, Smith and Waddle in the Alabama game, against even Denzel Mims, if you go back to the bowl game, who was a, you know, first-round pick. So it – or I think late first round, maybe an early second for him, but, you know, high pick in the draft of the receiver position. So they are going to watch tape specifically in terms of how you performed against those other NFL-level athletes, just like people were watching Chase against, you know, in that Georgia game and even against when he plays against Sertan in Alabama. So that's what you see. You got NFL talent across the board, specifically in Georgia's secondary, and there's a lot of those guys that are going to be picked. So, you know, evaluators are going to see how those guys performed against them.
I think those 40 times for Kyle Pitts and Ja'Marr Chase made them top 10 locks and potentially sneaking into that fifth spot in the top five. You know, if it's not five quarterbacks, if a team doesn't trade up to get a fifth quarterback up there, it's as loaded of a top 10 as I can remember. And maybe that's because it's so SEC heavy. We just see those guys
like Pitts and Chase. To me, Pitts, Chase, Sewell, those three guys are the first three non-quarterback picks. And that's what's even more interesting about this draft is the lack of just high-end and true elite-level first-round type defensive talent. Like, you might see where it might be 11, 12, 10, 11, 12 before a defensive player is picked. So that's very different from years past.
Joe Henricks in the YouTube chat says that he believes the 49ers are going to go after Ja'Marr Chase. It'd be quite a haul to trade up for a receiver when that's not a position that typically a team like the 49ers, especially, and the Steelers do this often. You can get talented guys that can do a lot of great things later in the draft. So, you know, with the difference between a Ja'Marr Chase and an Elijah Moore be so much that you want to trade future capital, I just don't think that's the case.
That was a quarterback trade.
Yes. It's quarterback trade, and Kyle Shanahan knows quarterbacks. I think we can stop at that. We're here to talk about Georgia cornerbacks and guys that will be defending against those quarterbacks and those receivers. And we're both going to share our screens a couple of times here. So we'll just start alphabetically, although we're not going to stick alphabetically because – there are two corners in this draft for Georgia that are going to get the most buzz. DJ Daniel is just not going to be drafted as high as Tyson Campbell or Eric Stokes. So that's not a slight to him. It's just the facts of where they're at. I think every NFL analyst, college analyst, they would tell you that. Georgia's playing time can tell you that. So I'll share my screen right now, and we'll just kind of give a quick intro, and then you can dive a little bit deeper. So let's start with Tyson Campbell, 6'1", 193 pounds out of American Heritage High School in Plantation, Florida. Just an insane athlete. And really, I think the book on him has been about the same as when he arrived at Georgia. With that frame and that speed, he can do what you need him to do. And I think the NFL is saying the same thing, although I would say his production probably did not match his athleticism as a whole, and that tells you how athletic he is. 33 games played, 89 tackles, one interception. He did force three fumbles, including – he said on a video that the UGA Twitter account put out that his most memorable play at Georgia was his freshman season, the strip and then return for a touchdown against Missouri. And we were going to talk about some of our favorite plays. And then I saw that and I said, man, he's doing no work for us. Tyson Campbell, 40 time of a 4.37. And obviously that varies in the sources with the stopwatches there. But that was from UGA's Twitter account. Brent, as a whole, Tyson Campbell seems like a guy that any NFL team would covet, at least athletically.
That's the key. What's most interesting to me about this cornerback class is, like, you just go down through it, 10, 15, 20 deep of 6 foot, 6'1", 185, 195, 200 pounds that can just flat out run. So what's going to distinguish guys that elevate, you know, in terms of their draft stock and what's going to put, you know, their Sertan and Horn in the top 15 versus Campbell, Stokes, others being in the, you know, 40, 50, 60s range, who knows, is production. And it's, you know, how much are you, you know, sort of the ball skills, you hear that talk about a lot. And that's one thing that we just didn't see a lot of from Campbell at UGA. But in terms of just sheer size, speed, I mean, he was a, you know, 10-5, 10-6, you know, or better, I think, 100 guy in high school. And that is even us. Like, if you look at the PFF draft board, he's, I think, 66th overall on the big board for us. And now, granted, we put a lot of other factors into it, but he's the 8th cornerback on our rankings. And a lot of that is the potential as opposed to the production part. Right at 1,500 snaps. And I think if you look from a sort of weakness standpoint, it's – and this is going to be the case, I think, for all three guys that we're talking about, is it's both positive and negative, is their level of physical play. And all three of them, in terms of, you know, right around, you know, 5 to 9, 10 type penalties, very handsy, kind of grabby, you know, and that's just, that's what they do. And they're allowed more so to do that in the college level. But the other good side of that is, especially, and for me, like, if I think about Tyson Campbell's most memorable play for me, it wasn't like the strip and the fumble return was a great one. But this past season against Auburn, when you had Anthony Schwartz, you know, on a bubbled kind of jet type action, and Campbell chases him down all the way across the field near the goal line, tackles him short of the goal line. That to me is just that signature play of this guy is an elite level athlete and an NFL level athlete from day one.
Well, and one thing about him too is that when he gets into the character and the leadership, and he's going to pass that with flying colors. Guarantee you that guy's done well in his interviews, and I think all three of these guys. And I'm not saying that because I work for a site that covers Georgia. That's not homerism at all. That's saying from the people that I've spoke to, they say that all three of these guys are hard workers, and it comes out. And you know, one of the things that you and I talk about, the NFL doesn't care as much about the character stuff as maybe colleges do. They care about what can you do on the football field and will you be there? So as long as you're not doing anything that's going to prevent you from being on the field, nah, show up and work. That's what they want.
And what was it that Jeremiah said on the podcast? Red, something to do with red, like a red.
Red star player. When he was with the Baltimore Ravens, they would flag red star players as just guys that wherever you get him in the draft, that's a guy that you want on the team. Right. And some of that could be energy. He said Richard LeCount had checked all of those boxes, where frankly, Richard LeCount physically doesn't check some of the boxes otherwise. So that would help a guy like him. But we see so many cases of guys that are the opposite, where you don't know if they're going to show up. I mean, I hate to call him out here, but the Isaiah Wilson situation is the extreme of the extreme of the extreme on that.
Yes.
First round talent, and now he doesn't have a team or a job. So,
you know, so Campbell, I think, also checks that sort of a plus character box, and we've heard so many of those good things. But when you look at that, so you combine elite athleticism, plus character, work ethic, all those kind of things with production, he actually, his career overall grade, 83.3, his career coverage grade, 81.9. So there's high level production there. Now, one of the things I think that might push him slightly down, there's, you know, it's not like he tore a knee up or anything, but he's always, you know, nagging like hamstring and other little injuries that have, you know, shortened a lot of his second sophomore season, in and out of the lineup at various points because of injury. But still yet, the measurables are there. All the testing is there from the athleticism standpoint. And I think you're going to see him in terms of who goes first, Stokes or Campbell, I think we'll save that for later. But he's going to be there in one of those first two, and within the second round somewhere.
When you were looking through your PFF data, did anything stick out about how Campbell performed against some of those top NFL quality receivers?
Yeah, so like we talked about at the open, I went through and looked, and it's with Chase against Chase, Marshall, Jefferson, Terrace Marshall, likely finds himself late in the first round, early second. Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams at Auburn, Josh Palmer at Tennessee, Smith and Waddle. And then the Florida game for Campbell, I put Grimes and Pitts because those were two big plays in that game. And then Denzel Mims. So when that's one thing in one area where if you take out those plays versus the rest of his career, he's probably, you know, up near 90 in terms of grade. But against those players that I just mentioned, he gave up 14 receptions on 20 targets for 311 yards and 4 touchdowns. And, you know, one of those was the Waddle touchdown this past season against Alabama. That was, you know, sort of his, where he just slipped a little bit and got you know, got beat against in the Florida game. Two jump ball touchdowns that Pitts and Grimes both just jump over top of him. Palmer the same way in the Tennessee game, got a touchdown on him in that realm. So, you know, those guys, he didn't get targeted against them against Denzel Mims. So against those elite level players, he's had a little bit of those. It wasn't like he just wasn't there and he was completely torched. It was just plays on the ball at the catch point. The other guys made him and he didn't.
It's one reason why tackles is not a really good stat to measure cornerbacks specifically, because if a player has a low number of tackles, it probably means that they weren't targeted very much, which means they were doing their job. It's a lot like offensive line in some ways. Missed tackles, definitely.
Yeah. And what's amazing when you – all three of these players, and this is one of the things that to me every NFL team is going to look at and be like, all right, that guy can go tackle every single one of them, all physical in the run game. And between the three of them, their entire careers, 11 missed tackles. And, you know, we're talking almost 3,500, 3,800 snaps between the three of them. 11 missed tackles, all high tackling grades, very, very good in that department.
It speaks well of Georgia's defense. I'm going to share my screen again if you're watching on YouTube and just show you. I collected three different mock drafts. So Daniel Jeremiah gave us his. If you scroll back in this podcast feed or YouTube feed, you'll see my conversation. It was mainly Jim Donnan's conversation with Daniel Jeremiah. I was helping facilitate and run a Zoom, but Daniel was awesome, and we enjoyed doing that. So we've got his grades on here. We've also got Todd McShay from ESPN, and then NFL.com is also on here. And for Tyson Campbell, they all said second-round pick, and I think that that's probably pretty accurate for him. I think that's also a really good landing spot because that gives him a really good runway to get that second contract, and that's what players – always say is you got to get the second contract because that's where the money is.
Yeah, in our mock draft simulators, we've added a thing, average draft position. So all the mocks that people are doing on our website at PFF, his average mock or average draft position is 59.2. So right around, you know, that lower middle to late second round, and I think that's where he ends up. I actually think that, you know, and I'll go ahead and say it, I think Stokes gets picked before him, because of the consistency of high-level play and some of the things that we've seen from him as opposed to Campbell. But still, yeah, you go in the first couple rounds. And what's going to be interesting for all three of these players is the depth at receiver, the depth at corner, because there's such depth at the positions. You know, a team at, you know, 40 might say, all right, I'm going to take this, you know, offensive tackle here because I feel good about getting a corner in round three. I don't have my grades on my corners aren't that different. These five guys are here. One of them's going to be there at my third round pick. So I'm going to go ahead and take the best offensive tackle or D lineman or edge guy here. And I think because of the depth of the positions, it might push both of or all three of them down just a little bit.
And a game that I play with my friends that I'll text sometimes, and this is a bit jokey, so don't take this part too seriously and think this is some crazy analysis. But, like, this guy kind of feels like a blank. So, like, then you insert the team there. So like, obviously there are stereotypes in the NFL. You can pick out the guys that are going to be Ravens for 10 years and just be on that defense forever because that's what they do. You can pick out the guys that run really fast and be like, oh, yeah, that's a Raider. Tyson Campbell, to me, you know, I think about – he kind of feels like an Indianapolis Colt. I don't really – you know, I don't know why per se, but maybe it's on turf, he'll be a little bit faster. Pretty stable franchise. Tyson Campbell feels like a Colt. So
I also think Seahawks.
Oh, that's good.
Seattle, because of the length that they want, and the length that now or even the Cowboys now with Dan Quinn as defensive coordinator, the length that they want at that position. I think those two teams kind of set up well there.
You're gonna be good at my game. This guy just feels like whatever. That's what we'll go with. So a second round pick, I think we both agree that that's pretty accurate for him. Let's move on to Eric Stokes. I agree with you that I think Eric Stokes will get drafted higher than Tyson Campbell. And, you know, when I pull up his kind of bio that we have, I have lost that in my screen share. There it is. Okay. Eric Stokes, 6 foot, right at 6 foot. He was a couple, you know, a little extra over, I would say. 6 foot, 194 pounds. Eastside High School, Covington, Georgia. Shout out Newton County. 36 games, which I think is big for him, is consistent production. 78 tackles, 4 interceptions. He did force a fumble, 26 passes deflected. That 40 time really stands out of a 4.28. You know, in some training, it sounds like he got that down to 4.25, somewhere in there. And look, you don't even have to ask what is the most memorable play, because you can still feel it if you watch the game against Tennessee, where he forces a fumble return for a touchdown. I think Tay Crowder ended up with that football. But
yes, that's right.
I forget the Tennessee. Was it – who was the Tennessee?
Maurer.
Yeah, Brian Maurer. Yeah, they played a couple quarterbacks that game, and Maurer, unfortunately, was the one in there taking that hit. Completely open on the corner blitz and a really formed tackle. It was safe. It was effective. And Georgia scored points off of it, and there are paintings now of it if you walk in downtown Athens, I'm sure, in some of the establishments around there. Eric Stokes contributed early and often at Georgia. I think he leaves as one of the more consistent contributors in Kirby Smart's defense, and I think he'll be rewarded for that.
Yeah, very much so. And I also remember, like, the very first game that he got a lot of run against Missouri, and he blocked a punt. He almost borderline, he basically blocked a punt. So that, I remember that as well, but I think that's the thing you see with Stokes, is just consistent high level play. One of the interesting things about him, just like Tyson Campbell, the ball skills argument, he didn't have any interceptions going into the year, and then he had 2 pick sixes and 4 interceptions on the season, and still high level play. But like from a career standpoint, his career overall grade 90.5, his career coverage grade 90.1, and just from a outside of the penalties and some of the hand usage and the sort of the grabbiness that he had there. But again, college is different than the NFL. And I think that's probably the one thing that all these guys are going to have to transition to, is how much less physical you can be in the NFL, and you can't put hands on people. But you can't coach that speed at all. You can't, it's there, it's going to be his thing. And it's going to be something where an NFL team just looks at that and says, all right, no matter what, this guy's not really going to get beat in a speed standpoint. And the other thing that I think both Campbell and Stokes, and even Daniel, just because of how deep Georgia plays their defense, value in press coverage, and very much a lot of experience in press coverage. So in Stokes' career in press coverage, only allowed 49.5% completion, 500 yards on 105 targets. So very much adept at playing in press coverage. So I think that's going to find him, and just that level of consistency, health, all that goes through that, I think that finds him. And even like, if you look at our rankings, he's 73rd on our overall board, 11th in the cornerbacks. I think he's going to go 4 or 5 spots higher than what we have him ranked, just because of the factors that we discussed.
You know, early in his career, one of the things that I marveled at was that Eric Stokes could cover so closely and not draw pass interference penalties. Now, that did not remain as consistent. Now, as a whole, he was still really good in that category, but he was almost legendary early on and not drawing penalties when the ball would be thrown his way. Over time, I guess you regress to the mean some. It's actually one thing Tyson Campbell struggled with too. And you were saying that physical play is something that is going to be required of these guys. But the ability to do that without drawing the penalty is massive in the NFL.
And he got some bad luck even, and there's all, when you're always a handsy, being physical at the cornerback position, there's always the, they could call it here. They didn't, they could call it here. They did. Kind of thing. And unfortunately for Georgia, they called it in the absolute worst possible scenario against on 3rd and 9 that led to, I think, a field goal at least, or led to a touchdown on the next play, the one in the end zone against Devonta Smith. But those kind of things, it's just going to adapting to the NFL game. I think the one thing that when you look at between the two players, Campbell and Stokes, that you just see a little more natural hip movement and hip turn and, opening up the hips to be able to run with guys from Campbell. And I think that's the reason probably in our rankings that you see him higher. But I think to me, the consistency being there, always being there, health part, not having that, those kind of nagging things that the other guy had, I think that's what pushes him for me above Campbell in this situation.
How was Stokes in his matchups against some of those best receivers that we were talking about?
A lot better. A lot better. When you Now against, let's see, he had at least two targets against all the ones that we looked at. So that's the LSU trio, that's the Auburn duo, then Palmer, Devontae Smith, Waddle. Against Florida, you know, I just sort of lumped the Florida game in together as one. He didn't actually get, wasn't on Pitts at all. And then Denzel Mims. So against those guys combined, 12 receptions allowed on 22 targets, only 138 yards. Now three touchdowns he did give up, but and one pass breakup, but still a lot better performance overall than his counterpart.
In a matchup league, I mean, these scouts know that. They see that. And I'm sure it's one thing the Georgia coaches say is that we felt comfortable leaving him one-on-one against good receivers.
Yeah, very much so. And what was amazing, like when the one big game that he missed, like he went out early in the Notre Dame game, the home Notre Dame game 2 years ago. And it took Notre Dame till like the fourth quarter to realize, oh, he's not there. Let's go attack the guy that that played much of the snaps for him. So
let's look at where mock drafts have Eric Stokes going. It's a bit all over the board. Daniel Jeremiah had him locked in as a second-round pick, just like Tyson Campbell. I think that that's probably the consensus based on what I've seen, but Todd McShay had him falling to early third round in his latest ESPN draft, and then NFL.com had him rising up to a first-round pick. I think that had him going to the Saints, which would probably be a decent fit for them based on some of their losses financially and free agency. So I think anywhere in the first, if he gets to the third round, someone's got an absolute steal on their hands.
I agree.
And they better hop on it. I think he's a late first round guy, frankly.
And like for us, his average in the mock simulator, his average draft position was 78th. So, you know, definitely in the third round there. But I think he's in the battle to be the fourth corner. And what's the wild card there is Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, because I think consensus, you have Surtain, Horn, and then the Newsome kid from Northwestern as kind of top three guys on most boards, most everything that you see. But Farley now with the back and having this second back issue throws a big wrench into things, because he was looked at kind of a number one type guy. But now how far does he slip? And then I think when you get to the top of the second round, and then it becomes like scheme fit, because you've got, to me, it's between Stokes, Asante Samuel Jr., who Stokes is a little bigger, but doesn't have the, you know, ball skill production that Samuel does. And then you've got Elijah Molden from University of Washington, who's more slot corner safety type, but more slot corner guy than outside guy. So if someone values Stokes and values the outside corner more early in that second round, I think he becomes, and if Farley falls, so that's the key. If Farley's health to the point where he falls and moves to a mid to late second round guy because of the health part, I think he can sneak in there and become that fourth corner taken, which
don't discount
right at the top of the second round.
Don't discount the NFL pedigrees on a couple of those guys too. I know Surtain just on his talent, but obviously, I mean, he grew up in the NFL essentially. Same thing with Asante Samuel. One thing that we probably should have mentioned with Tyson Campbell, he played in the same defense with Patrick Surtain Jr. in high school.
That's amazing.
That poor division that had to throw against those two guys. I'm assuming they just ran the ball a lot.
Whoever played them lost a lot. I think they won the state title that year, by the way. I'm almost certain they did.
They win the state title frequently from yes. what I understand with South Florida football. Stokes and Campbell, great players for Georgia for a long time. Probably consensus, if you just combine everything that's out there, would say second round for both of them. I just think that Stokes may have a bit more of a window to rise up higher if things get a little squirrely in front of him, and I think that's exactly what you're seeing too. DJ Daniel is Georgia's third cornerback in this draft cycle, and you know, it's a bit of a weird situation for Daniel because he did not play a whole lot this last season because of injury. 6 foot, 185 pounds. He may be a little bit heavier at this point. That was the latest that I found. Spalding High School in Griffin, Georgia, came to Georgia by way of Georgia Military College as a transfer. Played in 21 games, mostly in the 2019 season. 51 tackles, 9 passes deflected. 40 time is slower than the other two guys, 4.46.
Still checks the box. He's fast enough.
fast enough to run as far as you need to with these other guys. He's just not going to have some of that like flashy workout kind of things. In terms of mock drafts, most people have him going late in the draft, and so you're just not going to see a whole lot of reputable mock drafts that go, you know, in that fifth, seventh round range.
Right.
That's where Daniel Jeremiah had him, is somewhere in the between the fifth and seventh round. And frankly, once you're getting to that point, you know, if you're in the seventh round, I hear a lot of people say you'd rather be a free agent anyway, so you can kind of choose your opportunity. Overall, from DJ Daniel, what play or plays come to mind when you think about his tenure at Georgia?
I mean, unfortunately for me, a couple of them where he got beat deep but didn't give up touchdowns. But I think the most thing that I remember from him is his ability to be physical in, like, the bubble screen and run game. Always keeping great leverage and being physical with receivers, never sort of pushed off his spot in any way in that way. But I think we need to go back and look at 2019, obviously, because that's where he played the majority of his snaps.
And that's also when he had what I think was his most memorable play, which he played a big part in helping Georgia secure the win in the final play against Notre Dame in the night game in Athens. That final play, he was right there involved to make sure that pass was broken up, Ian Book's pass. I forget who it was to, but still, that was when I think about the best thing that DJ Daniel did, that was at least his moment in the sun.
Yeah, and he played great in that game specifically. If we look back, I'll sort of pop mine on here. If we look back to this is DJ Daniels from in the PFF looking back at his 2019 season, 683 snaps, 89.2 tackling grade, I think was leading or second leading on the team. And look, when we look over the coverage numbers, 47.2% allowed in terms of completion percentage, very little yards after the catch. A lot of pass breakups, but the penalties, obviously, the handsy things that we talked about with the others, it still was there with him. And then, obviously, we don't see as much from a production standpoint this past year because he only had, 140 snaps. So, you know, when you look at that, I think, again, though, still 6 foot, 190-pound guy who very physical. I mean, at the Senior Bowl, just went up against everybody he possibly could, got every rep he possibly could, which I think would be – from a team standpoint, endearing. And I think he had an interesting quote. Hopefully I'm not misquoting here, but I thought he said at some point, maybe at the pro day, that he would have come back if he didn't feel confident in his draft position. And, you know, if he hadn't gotten a grade from the NFL guys that, hey, you're going to be picked in this kind of range. I think I eventually see him in that, possibly in the late third, but depending upon the run of cornerbacks, I see him more as a fourth or fifth round guy. And I think he jumps a lot of the guys that we have over him in terms of our board. He's 203rd overall, and I think the 30th ranked cornerback. I think people are going to go back. There was a good somebody had put on Twitter all of his snaps against Jamar Chase from the LSU game, and he was right there with him the entirety of that time frame. And if you look at his performance against those same guys, the plethora of receivers that we talked about, so that just becomes the LSU game, the Auburn game this season, against Josh Palmer, Tennessee, where he did give up one big play for the touchdown, and then against Denzel Mims. In those four games combined, 8 receptions allowed for 116 – or 8 receptions on 16 targets, 148 yards and 1 touchdown. But a couple pass breakups, very good against LSU and really good against Auburn, other than once his coverage grade wasn't good because he got beat a couple times. I know Schwartz beat him once and just got overthrown by Knicks. But I think – you're not going to go wrong taking him in the fourth round as a guy that you can put in that's going to be physical, that's ready. Again, same thing, played a lot of press man coverage and played against big time competition.
DJ Daniel kind of feels like a Dallas Cowboy to me.
I mean, that's it.
See, that's the reaction I try to get in this game. I succeeded in my goal.
I would almost say very Cleveland Brownie to me. Ooh. And the reason I say this is because I've seen them recently get into that, you know, they took Greedy Williams and some other guys that have that same size, speed kind of combo. So, yeah.
Didn't give you my Eric Stokes feels like. I feel good about this one. Okay. Los Angeles Chargers.
I can see that. That's a very good one, actually.
Yeah, I won you over.
I could also see him as a Jaguar. I could see, you know, Urban is a guy who Urban Meyer, now the coach for the Jaguars, loves him some speed, and even the Raiders. The Raiders, obviously, you know, anybody who's really really fast, you associate a lot of times with the Raiders. But I think he could be a Jaguar is one I could see him being, especially at the top of round two.
In terms of DJ Daniel, I think Georgia's got a cluster of guys that could go in that anywhere from fourth to sixth round range. And yep, it's all going to depend on team fit. And then if there's a run on a certain position, maybe teams right, reach a little bit, or opposite, if there are run on positions away from that, maybe the depth just hangs out there longer, because you know, we're going to talk about these guys in subsequent weeks, but I think the same thing could be the case for a Ben Cleveland, a Trey McKitty, who did the same thing with DJ Daniel and performed well at the Senior Bowl. Richard LeCount could fall down toward that range. But at the same time, some of these guys, there's going to be one or two guys that don't get drafted from this group at Georgia, and it's going to surprise a lot of us, but there are a lot of good football players, and they come from a lot of different places. The other thing, too, is it's really hard to evaluate based on last season. And so some guys are going to take some flyers based on what they've seen in combines and pro days.
Yeah, it's a draft season unlike any other with no combine. I mean, last year the teams couldn't meet with players and do all that stuff, but the combine happened. So you at least had that, and you got sort of some semblances of pro days later, but it's still a very intriguing draft season. I think one of the things that at least guys that, you know, SEC type, all the SEC players have, hey, I got 9 or 10 games against all SEC competition. Go watch this past season on my tape. Like even Daniel played decently well when he was able to play this past season, to the point where, you know, when all three were healthy, there was at one point when all three were truly healthy, that there was a rotation where it'd be Campbell Stokes to start, and then, you know, a couple series in Daniel and Stokes for a while, and then Campbell Daniel for a while. So the coaches felt confident enough to fully rotate.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. What round for Daniel?
I think he goes early fourth round. At worst, I think middle of the fourth round.
So Georgia, based on your predictions, would have 2 second-round corners and 1 fourth-round corner. That's pretty good. I mean, that's really good for one position on a team.
Yes, and we still got two secondary guys that we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll talk about some interior defenders on the back end. I do want to give you a minute or two to discuss Atlanta Falcons and what you think they might do, because one of my favorite things about your Twitter feed are your PFL
Friday Falcon mock.
Friday Falcon mock, where I like to see where your head is at. And I know sometimes you just think, oh, that might be cool. Let me experiment with this. But I mean, now the Falcons are in a very prime position to really shake up what can happen in the first round.
They are on some very, you know, when it's all location, 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 and real estate, they are in some very good real estate right now. If they want to do, I mean, if they want one of the top four quarterbacks, and, you know, it's Fields, you know, it's Lawrence, Wilson, Fields, and they want to take Trey Lance as a developmental guy who, you know, is going to sit behind Ryan for at least a year or two, I think they fully aware to do that, because they're not, to me, the elevation in coaching that they're going to get over, you know, over this season and then next is going to put them in the, you know, now we got the weird 17 game schedule, but, you know, put them in the nine or 10 win category at minimum because of that elevation and the talent that they have already. You're not going to get that opportunity to be this high in the draft to pick quarterback again, I think, for a while. So that'll be intriguing. It basically comes down to me, if they want to go quarterback, take the guy they like, that's there for, if they like one of those, you know, four guys, and especially from their evaluations for future quarterbacks and then even other quarterbacks in the draft, or you move down. Now, who you move down with becomes quite interesting, because we know Carolina's probably looking to move up. Denver is a likely, you know, possible move up type team.
And it's hard with Carolina, because the Falcons, do you want to give someone a young quarterback in your division?
Exactly. That's like, you better take everything from them, I think, if you move back with them specifically. But to me, every mock draft that I do, and if I move back, I move back to a place where I would like to be able to still get Kyle Pitts. Because to me, he's the one player, like, and if they just sit pat and select a player at 4 that is not a quarterback, he's the only one I would take.
You know, I look at the division, and A lot of my family are Saints fans, so I'll just be like very upfront with that. So I know a bit more about that. The Saints trajectory is not good right now. They have a lot of money issues. They're replacing Drew Brees. It's probably going to look like that's Jameis Winston / Taysom Hill. That's not going to be a team that does a whole lot, especially in the short term. So when I look at the division, let's say like a 3 or 4 year window, I mean, Tom Brady might play forever. We'll see. Maybe he does for Tampa, but Carolina searching for their quarterback solution. New Orleans will be searching for their quarterback solution. In the long term, Tampa will have to do so as well. That puts the Falcons in a spot where they can get an early advantage on what that post-Matt Ryan era looks like. And if they get a player that solidifies that spot, I think the Falcons will be in a prime spot to control the division in the foreseeable future. And like you said, if you don't get a high enough pick to do that, especially in a draft where quarterbacks aren't quite, I mean, if you look at next year's quarterback class, from what we know now, it's not going to be as good next year. Maybe the following year it picks back up, but this is, it seems like a pretty legendary quarterback draft.
Yeah. And what's interesting is because of who your coach is now. And I was talking to Pollock recently about, you know, sort of draft type stuff, and his comp for Trey Lance was Ryan Tannehill, mm-hmm. who Arthur Smith just coached, you know, extremely athletic guy. You know, Tannehill was a receiver, but, you know, partly quarterback, receiver kind of guy, and then eventually settled at quarterback and got picked high. But very athletic, size, speed, very similar, that kind of traits. And then now you've got the guy who coached Tannehill and has made him, you know, a top three ranked quarterback, at least from PFF grades, over the past few years. That one to me, if you're going to sit there and take QB, because I think Fields goes three, I just think there's too much good. People are nitpicking way too much on him. There's too much talent, too much everything for him not to be one of the top 2 to 3 guys.
My argument then would be, if you're going to go into what worked for Arthur Smith with the Titans, is you got to solidify that running back spot. And there aren't Derrick Henrys out there, but Najee Harris is pretty special. So if somehow the Falcons traded back and wound up with him, that'd probably be a pretty good fit, I would say.
And it'll be interesting to see, because there's a lot of people, a lot of Falcons fans who are heavily coveting Najee at that top of the second round pick that they have. So it'll be interesting to see how all that breaks down. I'm just excited. I love the draft. It's especially when, you know, the team that you're close to is picking so high, and such a quarterback heavy draft, it just makes for way more fun.
Well, I'll tell you this, if we're already seeing the trades and the movement a month before the draft, it's going to get pretty crazy closer to time, because that means teams are lobbying to do things. And typically teams don't like to show their hand until pretty close, because then there gives more time for their opponents to react. So there's a big chess game going on right now, and it's starting a bit earlier than I remember, at least in recent years.
And that's what's fascinating with the Falcons sitting at 4 is – like, for example, if we see a pre-draft trade and the Falcons move back off of 4, whoever's coming up to 4 probably either, one, loves both Fields and Lance, or, you know, loves one of the three and, or is fine with either of the three, or two, they know who San Francisco's taking at 3 and who New York's taking at 2. And they're like, all right, my guy that I want is going to be there at 4 and I'm moving up 4.
The other thing that's happening is when everyone's saying that Mac Jones is getting a lot of love in San Francisco – if everyone's saying that, that means someone's wanting them to say that. That's how these stories kind of get planted sometimes. So if you want to read,
what, 20% truth, maybe?
There's a lot of things that get said, that whether by agents to try to get their players a little hyped and get some GMs nervous, or by GMs to try to scare off some other teams. And, you know, Mac Jones will be a fine football player, I'm sure. But look, this stuff is not overly complicated to me. I can walk on a field and be like, Mac Jones or Justin Fields. Okay, I'm good. I know what
what's
I'm
interesting doing. For Carolina too. If Carolina doesn't move up, would they sit there and take Mac Jones at 4? Because outside of the, I think Burrow is obviously a better runner, but from an arm strength, throwing accuracy standpoint, those two compare very favorably. And what? Brady had Burrow, so, you know, Joe Brady.
But whoever gets Mac, their offensive line needs to be stellar, because he's not going to help himself in moving around. And it's one thing that, I mean, Joe Burrow can help himself and move around, and he still got clobbered on that terrible offensive line with destroyed. The Bengals. Derek Carr 2.0, at least for now. My brother's an LSU fan, so he's really worried about Burrow and his health.
The Bengals already signed one tackle, and, you know, there's still a world where they take Sewell at 5 or move back and take a Sewell later if they can, Rashawn Slater if they can. So I think the Bengals will address their offensive line very much so in this draft.
I'm going to toss one more question out to you and then we'll wrap this. But it seems like the quarterback drafting in the NFL is changing to an extent to where you almost take as many shots at it until you get the guy that can really help your franchise. I don't think that that was the case in recent years, because it used to be, all right, if we took a quarterback 3 years ago in the top five, we kind of need to stick that out and at least make that guy feel like he is worth it. I don't think teams care about that anymore. So I think when you see Goff and Darnold and they're underperforming based on where they were drafted, okay, we'll just take someone else right behind you because we need to do that. Have you sensed that change in, I'd say, the last 5 or 6 years?
Yes, very much so. The economy, or the sort of the market of quarterbacks. And you think about what wins in the NFL now. It's only one of two things outside of the anomaly that is Tom Brady and him always taking less money and things like that. Outside of that, it's either you have a rookie, quarterback that's good and on that rookie contract, and then you build greatness around them, a la Rams, Eagles in a way, and then just Foles kind of took what Wentz had done a little bit, or you have your high dollar quarterback and you get good enough in other places and create depth with, high value veterans. And that's how you win. You either have that greatness, the Rodgers and now Mahomes on the heavy contract, and then build around them as best you can and be good in the draft. Or you have the rookie quarterback with the quarterback on the rookie contract, and you put all kinds of talent around them that you can spend. So that's
and the best franchises tend to help start at one place and then transition to the other. I think that's what the Seahawks did so well. Russell Wilson was that underpaid guy on a really good team. And then, they built around him as much as they could. It seems like he's a bit disgruntled there now.
And then once you have that high-dollar quarterback, if you don't draft well and get guys who contribute and bring value in the draft, you're going to fall off. And Seattle's kind of done that.
You're going to have to start over and get another quarterback probably. I said it last question, but I was going to text you this after. I might as well do it on the show. If you had to pick five quarterbacks in the NFL right now, this is such a sports radio hacky thing. I'm curious how it would compare to mine. Most people obviously have Mahomes up there at number one, but like
top five.
Yeah.
Like, who's my list?
And I guess would you rather have for this season or you're building a team? Cause those are two different questions, right? Cause I think you'd rather have Aaron Rodgers for a season, but if you're building a team, you're not going to have Aaron Rodgers in your top five.
I mean, that's – Mahomes is obviously up there. Deshaun Watson had one of the best quarterback seasons when you look at it. I mean, independent of the other stuff.
Sure, sure. On the field.
Definitely independent on the field. Rodgers is still there. And you can't not put Brady there because of what he's doing, in terms of now, but obviously the down the road part. But I still am very much a believer in Joe Burrow. I think he's going to be a guy who stays and elevates himself year in and year out once he gets a little bit more from – the rest of the team.
I started this whole discussion to see if you would drop Kyler Murray's name because
as a fellow former short quarterback and fellow short quarterback, I will always be in Kyler's camp.
Kyler and Kingsbury out there, that's been a pretty good marriage, and now AJ Green joining the party.
JJ Watt and a lot of former guys.
And if you want to talk about a former Georgia killer, Andy Isabella from UMass is still out there running around. All right, we've probably gone on too long. We were talking about cornerbacks for most of this, but then we droned on as two guys that like sports do. Thanks for watching this. Thanks for listening. We will have another one of these next week. You're out next week. Is that correct?
Possibly. We'll see. More than likely, some point, yes. It's spring break. Who knows? We'll see. But it's a maybe. We might be able to work something out.
Family stuff comes first. At some point, even if we have to double up, we'll get to interior defenders, and that even goes further into the secondary as well, and then flip over to offense. We'll make sure we touch on every draft-eligible player from Georgia on this YouTube channel and podcast feed. Brent, if people want to see more of your content and your Falcons Friday mocks, where can they follow you on Twitter?
At @PFF_Brent.
That's really easy. If you want to follow me at Dane Young, it's just my name, DaneYoung. We are here on behalf of UGASports.com. Go join the Dog Vent. Check it out. Make sure that you're seeing the news breaking there. UGASports.com broke the news about the injury of Jermaine Burton. And then also the update that Jermaine Burton is going to be fine, but just have a spring football that's disrupted by a hyperextended knee. So go check out everything we're doing over at ugasports.com. And thanks for watching along with us. We will see you next time.